And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great hour for you today. We're going to be catching up on the news, and there's a lot of news to catch up on. Some very fascinating things are going on. We're going to be diving into the breaches of the week. And quite frankly, I think there's a couple breaches there that probably affect almost everybody listening to this. So stay tuned for that. And our deep dive, we're going to be asking the question, how can the world maintain political stability when their political parties keep getting hacked? And I think that's such an important question to answer. So let's go ahead and try and answer that in our deep dive this week. Stick around. It's going to be great. And as always, let's start with the news. And in consumer spying news, the U.S. government has issued an alert warning that Chinese-made drones could pose a cyber espionage risk to American businesses and other organizations that actually use them. Now, this notice basically said that those using drones for tasks related to national security or critical infrastructure were most at risk. This warning does not refer to a specific company, but we know that a lot of large companies, including construction, mechanical contractors, all that kind of stuff, actually use drones. Now, the market leader of drones right now is DJI. They are a drone company based out of China, and they've been in the news before when the Pentagon and Department of Homeland Security issued a warning basically saying, hey, if you're a civilian and you're using one of these around a military installation or nuclear power plant or anything, you may be giving the Chinese information, as a lot of the DJI cloud is based in China. Now, DJI, that's this DJI, basically said they have taken steps to keep their clients' data secure. And I quote from them in their statement, "We give customers full and complete control over how their data is collected, stored, and transmitted. For government and critical infrastructure customers that require additional assurances, we provide drones that do not transfer data to DJI or via the internet, and our customers can enable all of the precautions the Department of Homeland Security recommends." And so there you go. Now, DJI accounts for basically 70% of the U.S. market. That is how big they are. And it is absolutely huge. And so that is something that if you have a DJI drone, heads up, your consumer grade drone is probably going to be a little different than a business class one that, let's say, a massive construction company would use on a job site. But nevertheless, if you are using DJI's cloud, it is very possible that a foreign government is accessing all of that data. And so while you may have control of how it's collected or how your data is collected, stored, and transmitted, there's really nothing stopping them from copying the data and not telling you. And that is the concern. So believe DJI, believe the government, believe neither, believe both, whatever that is, take your pick. But that is your consumer drone information news of the week. And in China spying on us news, I think this is actually really, really, really interesting. Now, there's a Chinese-linked company that secretly owns 10 virtual private networks with 86 million installations. Now, the company that we're talking about is Innovative Connecting. Now, Innovative Connecting is a company that is actually based in China that owns 10 VPN products with 86 million installs, and recent research done by cybersecurity experts at VPN Pro shows that these popular VPNs right now are basically possibly data mining you and possibly stealing your information. Now, the study revealed that two of those VPN products are under another developer name, Lemon Clove. Another two are by Autumn Breeze, and interestingly enough, the most popular mobile-only VPNs that VPN Pro analyzed were actually Chinese-based. They were run by Chinese nationals or actually located in China, and any data that is held in mainland China obviously is wide open to access by Chinese authorities. Basically, this was confirming a recent senator's fear that American data was falling into Chinese or Russian hands. And I've written articles about this, about how if we are storing data through, let's say, popular apps that we don't realize are, you know, based in China, the Chinese government now has access to our information that we're storing there, which is potentially seriously damning, especially for kids. kids, you know, as they, you know, in 10, 20 years become the CEOs and the Congress people and all that kind of stuff. So if you have any of these VPNs, I would highly recommend stop using them. And I always recommend a VPN, and I'll tell you my recommendations after this. But right now, if you're running VPN Master Free Proxy or VPN Proxy Master Pro, VPN Proxy Master Lite, Turbo VPN, Unlimited Free VPN, Hot VPN, Snap VPN, VPN Robot, VPN So Fast, Turbo VPN Private Browser. If you're running any of those, you need to stop and you need to uninstall it, even if you paid for it. Don't think you can get a refund, but the point is that your information, it could possibly be collected by the Chinese government and then obviously used for nefarious purposes, possibly. So make sure that you're not doing that. Now, if you want a good VPN that actually is private, that is known good, known secured, as of right now anyway, one I would look at is Viper, V-Y-P-R, not to be confused with the antivirus Viper of V-I-P-R-E, V-Y-P-R VPN, Viper VPN. It looks like a little coiled snake. You can get it for Android and Apple and Windows and Mac and all this kind of stuff. That is actually by a company that is based out of Switzerland, and they are incredibly secure. Another good one is Private Internet Access, or PIA. Their symbol looks like a little green lock alien guy that is also a major player, and you'll spend like $30 to $50 a year with them, and you'll be able to use 5 simultaneous devices on one account. But those two won't data mine you. They're not going to collect that information. And so VPNs, while I think they're incredibly important, not all are built the same. And if it's free, you're the product in some way, shape, or form. So keep that for what it's worth. But if you have any of the 10 that I just listed, please, please, please uninstall them immediately and go buy a VPN. I don't care if you're a cheapskate. You really shouldn't cheap out on that. So take that for what it's worth. But that is your VPN news of the week. And in Facebook news, because you all know I absolutely love Facebook, especially if you are a longtime listener of the show or watch my videos or my daily podcasts, you know my stance on Facebook. But Facebook actually had some major news in the last couple of weeks in that they have now signed up more than a dozen major companies, including companies like Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, Uber, etc., to actually back a new cryptocurrency it plans to basically unveil and launch next year. Now, since you are hearing this now, they have basically decided, they've announced it. It's called Libra. And what they're basically trying to do is create a regulated cryptocurrency that they can use as currency, from Facebook, and then obviously have it used pretty much worldwide. One of the problems that people have had, and I'm not going to dive in deeply into cryptocurrency, is that, okay, so you own like a gazillion dollars of Bitcoin. Well, you can't exactly walk into a lot of places and start spending it regularly. Some places have adopted it. Overwhelmingly, the vast majority of the planet has not. And so Facebook is looking to literally build their own currency that you could take virtually, let's say on your mobile phone, and walk into any store, and it's backed by Visa and MasterCard and all of that, which basically means you can now use that cryptocurrency to pay for anything. And interestingly enough, I mean, I think not that Facebook's doing it, but I think the methodology for what they're doing here actually makes a lot of sense. I've always said cryptocurrency needed to be regulated in some way, shape, or form, which I know if you're into cryptocurrency and listening to this, you're probably calling me an idiot right now. But if we are going to have an adopted worldwide standard for a technology-based or a technology-only-based currency, meaning I cannot go get physical dollars of the cryptocurrency or physical cash for that, that's the way to do it. Because then what you have is you have those regulations, like Wall Street has those regulations, so you can't do things like pump and dump schemes and other stuff. And I think that's actually an important step in the life of cryptocurrency. I just don't like the fact that Facebook is doing it, because basically Facebook is not a social media company. Facebook is an advertising company that gives you social media as a way to data mine you to improve their advertising sales. And so if they have you now with your social media and you're telling them everything, and now they've got you, let's say, with the currency you're using to, you know, go buy groceries, go buy clothes, you know, maybe buy a car, you know, whatever that is, they now can track your purchases. They now can hone their advertising on you. They now can data mine you in another way. I'm actually going to be doing a future deep dive on this on the radio show about should we let Facebook be a country? You know, should we be treating them like an actual country? And there's a lot of very compelling evidence for that. And I did a daily video on that, I want to say a couple weeks ago. And I'm really going to expound on that because there's a lot of information out there that just is mind-boggling. But if you are into cryptocurrency, Libra is coming. And I think it's going to be the antithesis of your very decentralized, very libertarian Bitcoins and Ethereums and all of that. But it is a cryptocurrency. And I have a feeling it's going to be here to stay. So that is your Facebook news of the week. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And here is your fake news of the week. And by fake news, I mean my news is real. We're going to be talking about fake news. I just want to make that clear. This is not fake news. This is news on fake news. Now, an analysis was conducted by political researchers at Princeton University and New York University. Now, this was a study of American Facebook users, and it suggests that older generations were most likely to share fake news stories during the 2016 presidential election. And here's some interesting statistics that I found. I think you guys might appreciate this. More than 90% of Facebook users in the study did not share misinformation to their friends' feeds, according to the research. Of those that did, meaning the 10%, the study found that the age most likely was the significant factor. So, and I quote, "The oldest Americans, especially those over 65, were more likely to share fake news to their Facebook friends." Now, this is true even when holding other factors like ideology and partisanship constant. So it didn't matter if you were a Republican or a Democrat. Age was the biggest driving factor. So you could be an old liberal hippie or an old super conservative, you know, person, and boom, you're sharing fake news if fake news is coming across is in your worldview. Now, according to this study, each age cohort shared more misinformation than the preceding one, meaning younger people shared the least amount of fake news. People ages 65 and older shared 7 times as many of these stories as people aged 18 to 29, which obviously could possibly indicate a few different things. Now, the team defined fake news from a list of websites. I find this interesting, and this is where everybody will debate it. The team defined fake news from a list of websites identified by BuzzFeed News' media editor, Craig Silverman, in a series of investigative reports on highly shared domains throughout the election. They further refine this list by excluding outlets that could be considered partisan, such as Breitbart, which I know is a right-leaning website. And the study says the authors subjectively differentiated partisanship from fake news and wound up with 21 domains, including True Pundit and the Denver Guardian. And so Andrew Guest, who is a lead author of Princeton University, said, and I quote, "We were interested in a lot of questions related to learning about the political campaign via social media, but I can't say we had this particular topic in mind when we started. But it didn't take long for us to realize what we had." And so basically, I think what you're looking at is the more that people have adopted technology, meaning if you're 18 to 29 years old, which was the youngest demographic in this study, you've basically been ensconced in technology your entire life. And so you start to learn how to spot fake things like phishing emails, maybe fake news, a lot easier than somebody that didn't grow up with this. Imagine if you're 70 years old, you adopted computers maybe in your 50s, you know, something along those lines, maybe your 40s and stuff, and it's a different animal for you. And so you grew up, you know, with a Walter Cronkite in your life, and that was solid news. That was vetted information. Now we can get information from anywhere. And that actually can kind of get us into trouble. We all have our political views. We all are looking at things, you know, from the left, from the right, from the center. I think most of us probably run the balance. I'm probably one of those people. I'm not on any kind of extreme. You know, I see merit in both sides here. But for those that don't, that lean one way or the other, you know, let's say more so than somebody in the center, you start looking at news sources that reinforce your worldview. And by virtue of that, you know, if a fake news comes out that sounds legitimate, that reinforces that view, you want to get that word out. Aha, I showed you. See, this confirms what I believe. And I think we see that. Now, every group is guilty of this. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not pointing the finger at our senior citizens. I'm just saying that what I believe is that, you know, just given the adoption age of technology, because of where we were with technology when it really started making the mainstream with the internet, it's understandable. And so there you are. But I thought that was very interesting. And so that is your fake news, which is news about fake news of the week. And in what I'm calling probably interesting news of the week, I want to talk about Katie Jones. Katie Jones, and you probably don't know her, she's very plugged into Washington's political scene. She's a 30-something redhead. She basically had a job at a top think tank and basically had a who's who's network on LinkedIn of pundits and experts, basically connected to places like the Brookings Institution, which is a centrist one, to the Right Wing Heritage Foundation. She was also connected to the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, a senior aide to a senator, economist Paul Winfrey, who is being considered for a seat on the Federal Reserve, and on and on. But here's the thing. Katie Jones doesn't exist. The Associated Press has determined that that basically she's not real. Instead, her persona was part of a vast array of phantom profiles that are lurking on professional network websites like LinkedIn. And several experts that were contacted by the Associated Press said that Jones' profile picture appeared to have been created by a computer program. And if you go look for her, you can literally see the breakdown where they point out all these various artifacts and things like shading that are slightly off or not right, and all of this, that she's a computer-generated face. Now, William Evanina, director of the U.S. National Counterintelligence and Security Center, said foreign spies routinely use fake social media profiles to home in on American targets. And he also accused China in particular of waging, quote unquote, mass scale spying on LinkedIn. And I quote from Mr. Evanina, excuse me, quote, instead of dispatching spies to some parking garage in the U.S. to recruit a target, it's more efficient to sit behind a computer in Shanghai and send out friend requests to 30,000 targets. Instead of dispatching spies to some parking garage, you know, we can literally now just go ahead and just send friend requests and all of that kind of stuff, which I think makes, you know, obviously a lot of sense and all of that, especially because we can actually build our own secure communication using encryption over the internet and all of that. We don't have to meet in those dark garages like Deep Throat and all of that. So that is something to consider, because who's connecting to you on social media may not actually be who you think it is. And if you have anything to do with, let's say, the U.S. government or access to sensitive information for a government contractor and on, you become a much greater target than most of the general population. So heads up to you. And that is, I think, your interesting news of the week. And in Microsoft patching news, and I don't often do patching news, but this is actually a big one that happened a couple of weeks ago or so. As you know, we basically update our machines for two reasons: for features and performance, but more importantly for vulnerability. A lot of the updates, like the critical security updates, are those that fix holes in operating systems. So when Microsoft retires an operating system, meaning they're putting it out of, basically putting it out to pasture, and heads up, January of 2020 is end of life for Windows 7 and Server 2008, if you're an IT person listening to this. So, which basically means you no longer get access to patching, which means as hackers find vulnerabilities, they're not going to patch them. But there is the occasional exception of a vulnerability that is so unbelievably massive that Microsoft will actually go back and start patching dead operating systems. And that is literally what just happened. They came out about a month ago or so, 3 weeks to a month ago or so, and said, we are releasing patches for Windows XP, for those of you old enough to remember Windows XP, as well as the corresponding server operating system 2003. Now, here's the interesting part. Per statistics, as of right now, 3.75% of the entire world is still running Windows XP, and it was very highly likely that a vulnerability would have been exploited if they had left that unpatched. And so for that very limited time, the almost 4% of the world that still runs XP could have downloaded and updated for a serious vulnerability that in the past has caused massive exploitation and problems. And so basically the only thing you need to do to get this is attaching the computer to get to the internet. That's pretty much it. And so what we are looking at is a statement from Microsoft's director here, and I quote, any future malware that exploits this vulnerability could propagate from vulnerable computer to vulnerable computer in a similar way as the WannaCry malware spread across the globe in 2017. And so they patched 2003 and Windows XP. So if you are one of those 3.75% of all desktop users on Windows XP, or God forbid you're running a business on 2003, which you should have ditched years ago, please make sure you're turning on your Windows updating and getting the only patch you've probably seen in years, because it is that important. And so that is your Microsoft patch news of the week. And in Snapchat news, Snapchat internal staff has allegedly abused their role in the company to spy on Snapchat users and use internal tools to steal data. Now, current and former employees, along with a cache of internal company emails obtained by Motherboard by Vice, demonstrated the abuse of internal tools to access user data. Employees were able to access location information, personal information, including phone numbers, email addresses, and snaps, meaning the actual pictures or whatever they're sending over the Snapchat infrastructure. Now, multiple sources and emails refer to an internal tool called Snap Lion that was originally used to gather information on users in response to valid law enforcement requests. In other words, if Snapchat got a court order or a subpoena, basically, they would use that to cull the information for, let's say, whoever the subpoena was for in terms of users. Now, a former employee told Motherboard that Snap Lion provides, and I quote, the keys to the kingdom. And so I have talked about Snapchat before, how they seriously lack privacy. They, in the past, have had 3 FTC lawsuits and fines settled due to basically underage girls getting exposed on their website, or excuse me, on their app platform. And so what they advertise is, oh, you can send, let's say, a picture to somebody and then have that picture delete after 10 seconds, a minute, whatever that time limit that you set is, so the person can't keep the picture. It's supposed to be very secure, but the problem is that it's not a transmission from your phone to your recipient's phone. It goes from your phone to Snapchat's cloud to the recipient's phone. And so while the picture is being deleted off of the recipient's phone, the cloud was storing those, not deleting them from the cloud. Hackers hit the weak security and were able to download a whole bunch of rather damning and risque pictures on underage teenagers. So let's just leave it at that. So if you're using Snapchat, heads up, they can literally get into everything in your life using a product that they built internally called Snap Lion, and apparently they do it all the time. So there you go, and that is your Snapchat news of the week. And in Google News, heads up enterprise users. If you work for a large corporation that has your email and calendaring and all of that on Google and not Microsoft Office or some other platform, heads up. Now, Google is saying a small number, and I do not know what small is to them. Is that 1 million customers? Is it 10? I don't know. They're not saying. A small number of its enterprise customers mistakenly had their passwords stored on systems, on their systems specifically, in plain text, meaning when your password is there in their system, typically what we do is we scramble it. It's called hashing the password so that the password cannot be read very easily. So if I'm an employee of Google and I'm on their back end and I see your username, I see your password is hashed. I'm not able to figure out what your password is. In plain text means if I'm a Google employee and I'm on the back end, I can see your password. So you might have a super awesome complex password and I can literally read it. That's a huge problem. And so basically, they disclosed this exposure about 2-3 weeks ago or so, but declined to say exactly how many enterprise customers were affected, as I just said. And I quote Google, we recently notified a subset of our enterprise G Suite customers that some passwords were stored in our encrypted internal system unhashed. Now, that is a very serious issue that we have with them. And you know, they're not the only ones though that have had these problems. Facebook has stored hundreds of millions of passwords in plain text as well. In the past, Instagram as well, their Facebook property, and on and on and on. So that's a huge, huge problem. So if you are with Google for your company, I don't know about Gmail. They did not say like the personal Gmail accounts were in that manner, although we do know they allow third parties access to our email. They also allow Google engineers to get into our email systems as well. But in this case, enterprise. So if you are on enterprise, heads up, you may want to check with Google. Your passwords might have been exposed to a lot of their employees. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And this Breaches of the Week, we are kind of back to normal. I know the last time I had a radio show, my last show, we did Breaches of the Week, and it went on for something like half an hour. There was so much breaches. This one's not going to go on for nearly as long, but I'd like to give a shout out to a couple of different listeners and followers of the radio show or online and on my social media accounts like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. And so Chris Fowlon, Rebecca Rutherford, Dr. Christopher Gay, and Deepak Gupta. Guys, thank you very much for sending in some of these tips on data breaches and vulnerabilities and all of that. It is always greatly appreciated. I love to hear from my listeners. And if you're out there and you come across news, feel free to send it to me. Hit me up at questions@securityfanatics.com, or you can look me up on Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter. Take your pick on social media. I've also got a YouTube page. Most of it is /Nick Espinoza or /NickAESP. And you will be able to find me and send me a tip, and I'll definitely give you a shout out. But guys, thank you very much. And with that, let's actually dive in, and let's start relatively local to me in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Now, unauthorized access to certain employee email accounts basically occurred on March 6, 2019, that's when they discovered it. Now, the unauthorized access occurred between, and this is what I should have said, between January 16th and March 6th of this year, and this may have included social security numbers, account logins, passwords, driver's license and state ID numbers for Wisconsin, bank or financial account numbers, medical information, and or payment card info. So basically, if you have anything to do with Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, maybe you're a citizen, you might want to go and check that out. And I believe one of my stations broadcasts up there. So heads up to you guys. Moving on, we are looking at Lake City, Florida. Now, on June 10th, they suffered a ransomware attack, and the city was unprepared for this and basically had to pay $460,000 worth of ransom due to the triple threat ransomware virus being infected into their network by hackers. Now, unfortunately, they're not alone, because the week prior to Lake City, Florida, Riviera Beach, Florida, basically got the same thing and opted to pay a $600,000 ransom. So Riviera Beach obviously didn't negotiate nearly as well as Lake City, Florida did. But guys, come on, your cities, get better backups, get better security. And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.